Okay, welcome to the Leadership Connection. I'm your host, Doug Klucknet, and today I'm sitting down with a reliability leader, Mark Zimmerman. I have known Mark for 39 years now. He's actually the first person I worked with going into Eastman Kodak Company and starting out as an apprentice there. Mark was the first journeyman that I had the pleasure of working with. And I think we worked in the same area, you know, as an apprentice, you rotate for 3 years, and then I came back, and I believe we worked together after that, probably 8 or 9 years. But Mark and I remained friends throughout. He's somebody I highly respect. He was recognized as a leader early on at Eastman Kodak Company. In fact, Mark, you were probably in your 20s as a lead man. Is that true?
Yeah, I was. I want to say it was 27. I got out of the apprenticeship when I was 25.
Yeah.
And it was soon after that, I think.
So, and that was that's an accomplishment in a company that size. It's hard for sometimes for people to recognize, but somebody I always enjoyed working with. So, anyway, Mark, we'll get started here. Tell our audience a little bit about your background, the different companies you worked for, and the roles you worked in.
All right. So, my background is. We had a conversation before we started hitting record, and it's not altogether different than yours was, Doug, where I went to college, and I graduated from high school. Obviously, math and science were my strengths. I went to college because it was sort of expected that we go to college, and I didn't really know what I was going to do, and that only lasted a year. So, and then my father told me I was going to be footing the bill for the balance of it, so I made a decision maybe I should find some other path. So anyway, I happened to have a neighbor across the street who was a supervisor at Kodak and asked me if I wanted a summer job. And that would have been the summer of 1972. And I took the summer job, and it was all mechanical, things I'd never done before, but I took to it. And then I spent that summer and still didn't know whether I was going to go back to school or not. And so I worked out a deal so that I could stay on at Kodak. So from there, I went through, I was a mason's laborer. I mean, that was just where everybody that didn't come for some other specific reason went. And I built scaffolds and loaded scaffolds for masons for about 2 to 2.5 years, I want to say. Then the opportunity came around to get in the pipe apprenticeship. It was a 3-year apprenticeship, so I did that and finally found what I was supposed to be doing in life. So, you know, about all the high school trigonometry, all that stuff started to make sense, where before in the class it just didn't make sense. But I discovered I was a hands-on spatial learner, and things went pretty well. I mean, it just actually flowed naturally from there. So I went to Kodak. I ended up, Doug and I were in the same manufacturing area way back then, and then I stayed in that same building for the balance of my Kodak career. We did rotate around the Kodak Park area, the whole factory, for different types of experiences within our trade. But once I got to that building, there was so much to do and so much room to move, I ended up staying there. And so I ended up doing, I think when I left, I had ended up being there for 33 years. And that was, strange enough, that was 14 years ago. So that's, things fly right by. But I left there, and I was on a buyout. I didn't retire. I was too young to retire, so there was an opportunity to take a buyout, and I left. And I went to work at Victor Insulators in Victor, New York, and they make just about anywhere you drive, you look up at power lines, and you see the ceramic insulators, and that's what they manufactured there. And their plant and their process was very, very similar to the one that Doug and I had grown up in terms of batching and powder conveyance, et cetera. I stayed there for 2 years, and then I got recruited to go to Krista Construction Company. And it's a construction management company. One of my wife's cousins was the vice president there, and he said, "You need to give me your resume. We're hiring." I went there, and then I started realizing I wish I had been doing that job for, I don't know, 20, 25 years. I really wish, and I'm still doing that job. So I'm in that role still, and I like it as if I was 30 years old.
Very good. The old polymer place and the powder conveyance, that's really one of those things that's popped up throughout my career as well. And I can tell you, there's nothing more fun than going to a place and they're struggling with conveying something, whether it's, in most cases for me, it's been grain. And you look at the way they've got a rotary airlock installed, you go, okay, there's six ways to install that wrong. You've got five out of six wrong.
Yeah.
And then you wonder why it's not working very well for you. Right. So it's been fun to how much that place and the experience I got there has made an impact on my career. So looking at your career, Mark, when were you first recognized as a leader? Who were you working for and what project were you working on that brought about this recognition?
Professionally, I want to say career-wise, it was in polymer where you and I, where we were working there, and it was a small crew. I got in there with a lot of energy and a lot of ambition, I want to say. And so the reason it worked out there was because the place was just on the edge of destruction. There was no reliability on anything. It was known, that location was known throughout the company as the worst jumping off place to be. And I ended up there and I resisted staying there. But I'll get to that and why I stayed in the next series of questions, but it was pretty much just the intensity of having to get things done, and everybody that was there, not initially, but after a time, the team that we assembled there was just an understanding that this is a tough place to be, but man, oh man, it's rewarding when we can make this stuff run, and we actually started making an impact on the productivity of plant because we got everybody together and everybody, it was sort of a survival instinct and everybody knew it. And I just pushed, I had one speed and that was go. And I think it helped and it rubbed off on a few guys came in with it and it rubbed off on some other ones. And together we started to form this, I want to almost call it a brotherhood of survival in that plant, but it was enjoyable. And so I was working for Dick Lauer then, and he noticed something in me that I didn't notice at the time, but he started giving me responsibility and actually some freedom and trust to do some things they'd always wanted to do in terms of repairs and upgrades. And I ate it up. I was 27, I was 26 years old, and I ate it up. So that it just, things were just starting to really, really gel.
Very good. Just for our listeners, Mark described that as a small group. And my experience now after working with many companies outside of Kodak over the past 30 years has been, we had 28 people, right?
Yeah.
So in regard to Kodak, that was a small work center. You know, I tell them in our building, there was 131 maintenance people when I started there, right? So that work center of 28 to us seemed like it was a small group, but in reality, most places I go to, you don't find maintenance groups that are over 20 people. It's hard to believe.
Right.
So in your career, was there anybody that you looked at as a mentor that influenced your career? And what are some of the things you learned from that person or people? I mean, don't be afraid to list more than one.
I want to say the first one was somebody that you and I know well, and it was Jerry Agostinelli. And so he was known to be a real, I don't know what I can use language-wise here, but he was not a popular guy. We'll put it that way. But I think the reason he wasn't popular is because he was really, really straightforward with people. He was very direct. And when he didn't like something, he'd let you know about it. So
exactly.
And I mean, in no uncertain terms, he'd call you in the office and let you know about it. And so in my quest to be the best pipe fitter and become a leader and everything else, there were some times when he pulled me in the office and straighten me out on some things. And he looked right at me and he said, you got everything it takes. You're going to be fantastic pipe fitter and a leader someday, but you got to stop doing this, this, and this. And so we had a few of those little chats, and things started to come together. And so it's a time when I was actually supposed to transfer out upon graduation from the apprenticeship and go somewhere else. I got reassigned back to the building, and I was livid over it because I really did want to go out in the field and do the construction side of our trade. But I got reassigned, and then back in those days, that was where you're going or you don't have a job. So I went, and the first day I went in, and I told him I wasn't really happy about being back because I know he had shanghaied me back. And he sat me down, and he told me why I was there. And he says, let me tell you something, my friend. You're here because you can get everybody around you to do things the same way that you do. So he started laying a lot of this on me. I think some of it was fiction, but some of it I recognized. And he said, you've got a bright future. You just need to calm down and focus on it. And trust me that I will do right by you. I will take care of you. And so I all of a sudden I felt better about myself, and then I knew that the guy trusted me, and that was pretty inspirational for me. So he was probably the first one. And then there was another one who is still a very close friend of mine. I still fish with him. And he was an engineer in the building at the time. You know him, Doug. I think you know Jim Jackson.
Yeah.
So he was an engineer, and I had known him since we were in high school, but we had separated. I knew his sisters a little better, and I knew him just because of age gap. But he came into the building, and I was dazzled with his ability as an engineer, and he had been a dirt bike racer and everything else. So he knew the hands-on side of engineering, and he knew the science side of engineering, and he came in and made a big impact. And his focus, I mean, his determination, his tenacity, I don't know what else, objectivity especially. You know, he was able to look at problems and sit in a completely objective frame of view and look at a problem, and I don't know if I ever saw him not solve one. And so I learned to think a little differently as a trades guy, and I learned to think and be a little more analytical with my thought just from being around him and his personality. And I would say he was probably the biggest influence on how I approach work.
Very good. So looking back at your career and the accomplishments that you made, what are some of the things that you're most proud of?
Well, I think it goes back to the polymer teams. I mean, the things that we used to go through and some of the things that motivated me in terms of, we used to go in there every morning and gather in the morning for the marching orders of who's got what job today. And I mean, it was there for about 5 years. Every single day there was some kind of a crisis and everybody had to pull together. So I think that the team successes and going home at the end of the day after everybody had knocked themselves out all day, but it was on the realization that we accomplished what we needed to do. Things were back running again. Everybody was happy, and there was some real, real tool cohesion and cohesiveness amongst the group. And it was across the trades. It wasn't just my trade. We got in trouble with equipment up there, and it was just about everybody was doing stuff that either was in their trade or not in their trade, but it was whatever it took. And I learned a lot from that, and that motivated me a lot. So that became, I look back on it, and I think, you know, fostering that and either working hard to set an example or cheering people on when they were doing a good job was really an accomplishment for me. And later on, then we got competition when Fuji came along, and we used to have to, I mean, Kodak had cornered the market on consumer and movie film back then. We owned it, and nobody else had much competition. And then all of a sudden, here came Fuji, and we took a pretty hard hit sales-wise. And then everybody started receiving some different types of training and how to think differently, and we're going to beat this. It was a shifting of attitudes that I was put in front of about trying to get people to think differently and not accept defeat. And that transition into a day-to-day approach. If we're going to do this today, we're going to get it all done. And sure enough, we did beat Fuji in both sides of that business, and we got our market share back. And I believe that a lot of it, I mean, it was, you know, there's the supply chain and everything that has to go from bringing to market a product from raw materials to shelf. But I believe that our contribution at our piece of it was pretty big part of that success. And a lot of guys got satisfaction out of that.
Yeah, you know, when I look back on that time, Mark, is especially when I'm out with customers and I talk with them today and ask people, how do you know what you're doing is making a difference? How do you know you're successful? How are you measuring whether what you're doing is impacting your business, right? And I kind of get these blank stares, and I'll go back and I tell them, look, when I was in my 20s, right, and working on projects, and every project we did, we had to be able to show that there was a benefit for doing it, right? And most of those things were coming right out of our maintenance group to say, hey, let's do this or let's change that. And you had to say, what's the reason for doing that, right? Well, yeah. Over that time that you talk about, we actually lowered the unit cost of that product, put more product out the door, more product to the machines at a lower cost, lower the cost of maintenance in those years, right? Lower the emergency work, the downtime. All those things were measurable, right? And so, and after a while, you could feel the impact. We started out with a group of 28, and I think when I left there was 15, right?
Yeah,
and
I think that's
not like anybody got fired. People went on to do better things, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and it was a matter of, you know, our teams in the cycle time of doing tasks that we were accustomed to doing a whole lot longer in terms of time. We figured out ways to do it better. They had, you know, I mean, you know, we, some of the equipment changes we made it was a NASCAR mentality on a lot of that equipment and the changeovers, because a lot of it was repetitive changeover that was, you know, nuts and bolts the same, but how do you do it differently to gain on it? And then the other half of that is of the materials and the things we use, you know, how do we improve that? So I really look back on those years as some of the best years I ever spent.
All right, critical path planning.
For sure.
Incredible stuff, right? So
yeah,
you've been in a position where you've had to promote people and hire people. If you look at people and the traits, what are the top two or three traits that you would look for in a leader, and why are those traits important?
Well, right off the bat, I think that the personal piece of it and the people skill piece of it, and I don't mean necessarily that somebody's got to have great people skills, but when you're interacting with somebody in an interview, I watch for, you know, eye contact and sincerity, because I believe that when somebody's really got a gift, it shows.
Yep.
And that weighs a lot. I mean, I've had a lot of guys that can't look you in the eye for more than 2 or 3 seconds, and I know it seems kind of old school, but I really, really have found that it matters. So there's that. And then how, you know, when you put people in scenario questions, you know, I look for people that, you know, what level of supportiveness do they have if it's for a leadership position? I don't necessarily care for the term motivation. I went through some training that transcended that into more talking about inspired action versus motivation, because motivation can be positive and or negative. But when somebody's got a good supportive attitude, that tends to shift towards a positive angle when they're working with people. And I think that is what people need. And then credibility is everything. I mean, if you are good, credible, present yourself person, and you do what you say you're going to do, and you know, you carry, you follow up, and you actually be real, then that gives you the credibility you need for a leader. And I mean, you can get that out of some people a lot of times in an interview. So I mean, that's what I look for, is the credibility and supportiveness and sincerity.
All right. So nearly every leader that I've ever met, at one time we'll get on the topic of books and training courses. Are there any books or training courses that you have taken in your career that seem to make a difference and something you might be able to recommend for our listeners?
Well, I think I mean, the books go on and on as far as things you read that you get impressions from, but training, and we took a lot of training, but I think the one that changed my life basically and changed how I operate both in life and at work was the Six Sigma Green Belt training that we went through, because that opened my eyes to a whole bunch of things, not just within myself, but within other people.
Very good. So if you were forced to pick one way or the other, is leadership a natural skill or is it a learned skill?
Oh, man. Natural born leader. I think that you can be born with that. There are traits, I believe, that are not necessarily skills. There's leadership traits. Because I've known people that have leadership traits and they didn't do anything with it. And it was a darn shame, that it was squandered, in my opinion. But, of course, when somebody's happy, it's none of my business. But I believe it's a learned skill built from natural traits.
All right. Very good. I've had some good conversations with people about that statement. And I will say that, you know, years ago, I probably would have said that it was a thing you're born with. And the reality is just like you said, I think there's some traits that you can see in people that you say, wow, that would make a good leader. When it comes down to actually being put in that role and performing that role, you end up finding out that you're going to learn and you're going to make mistakes. And it's a process, certainly a learning process. And again, the mentors make the difference. The experience makes the difference. And training, of course, along with that. So someone once told me in our world, in terms of maintenance and reliability, you can either be a leader or a manager. What are your thoughts regarding that statement?
Well, I think, and just in my experience, I mean, and if you look at leadership in general, whether it's, you know, in the professional world or politics or, you know, whatever, I really think the best managers were good leaders before they were good managers. Because you can manage, anybody can manage just about anything, but the root of a lot of management, most management is involving other people towards a goal. And if you can't lead, then managing is going to be really, really difficult. So I just feel kind of like, you know, the best managers that I've ever come across were good leaders before they were even managers.
Right. So at this point in your career, and you're like I am, you're probably at looking at the light in the tunnel saying that, you know, someday here close, I'm just going to say enough, right? But what would you list as your greatest success?
Oh, man. I think it's just got to be looking back and, you know, coming through the school of hard knocks. And I know how trite that can sound, but I think that I learned everything the hard way, but I think it stuck more. And I mean, when I say learn the hard way, I learned a lot of things the hard way, not just professional stuff. And obviously it's not a career oriented thing, but sticking my, you know, keeping my nose to the grindstone and learning things and being hungry about learning was always focused on an end being my family and my kids. I believe because that's where it all led. That's why, otherwise I didn't need a good job. And both my kids have turned out. One of them is a spectacular leader, it turns out. And the other one is, I have to say they're both in leadership positions now. And one is a fantastic manager and a leader. The other one is a teacher and a leader. And I think that really rubbed off between my wife and I, and staying, you know, tough to the task through life. But that's got to be my greatest success, I think.
All right. And I wish I had written down on a piece of paper, because I said to myself before we even started this that Mark is going to say his family is his greatest success. Yeah, and you should be proud of that. I think I would probably list the same thing. And we have taken a very similar career path. I mean, I did go back to school at night, but it was really because I was motivated to do more, right? Just like you say, mm-hmm. You look at those things and you say, I know I can do that, right? And I think I'd be good at it. So you just keep pushing forward, right? And that school of hard knocks thing, it goes a long way. You know, when I sit and work with customers today and they hear me talking with their maintenance people, the maintenance people sit and they listen and they go, well, most of the time, people don't get their attention. And I said, that's because they understand that I've been where they are, right?
Yeah.
And it makes a difference. There's credibility, right?
Yeah, and well, credibility
that's
is what, huge.
That's what you carried with you into your career in this, you know, if you want to call it project management, but the stuff that you're doing, those tradespeople that you're working with on those projects, you know, when you tell them, hey, look, I've done that, and you might want to do this differently, or you might want to do it this way, or here's the way I would do it. They stop and they take notice and they go, okay, there's somebody that knows something. So, yeah, but in the end, it really does all come down to family, doesn't it? Those accomplishments where you go, you know what? There's no place I'd rather be than home. There's no place
I'd
rather be than with my kids.
Yeah, I mean, if you're paying attention and you're working hard, only one other thing that you can be looking at, and that's why you're doing all that. So it's worked out really well. I'm real proud. I mean, at the end of the day, what do you leave when you leave this earth? I mean, it could be that you've been a great manager, or a great leader, but the real lasting impact is the people that you left, there. And I knew that the first one was born, that man, I got a whole nother job to do now. So that's what it was all about. And I wouldn't change a darn thing.
All right, Mark, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it. I have a little piece in here that says, hey, you can give yourself a plug if you want people to find you. So if that's the case, man, go ahead and give yourself a plug or your company.
I work for Campus Construction Management group, and we manage contracts, large projects, everything from 12 million to, I think we've got one going for 90 million now, and we do schools only, and we do capital work on projects. And I'm also a partner in my drum business. I have a partner and we build custom drums, and so that leadership thing too is all your, it comes in handy, and the credibility all the way around. So that's my plug.
All right. Thanks, Mark. And for our listeners, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Leadership Connection. Until next time, this is Doug Flucknut. Have a great day.